Now, tomorrow marks the 70th anniversary of reports of a sensational attempt by the Allies to force Ireland to expel all diplomats from Japan, Germany and Italy from this country. According to historian T. Ryle Dwyer, this led to the greatest distortion of Irish foreign policy since the foundation of the state. The lead up to the letter and its aftermath is a complex tale of intrigue, deception and double dealing, which includes at least one larger-than-life character and many others who preferred to remain in the shadows. T. Ryle Dwyer joins us on the line from Kerry, and in studio is Michael Kennedy of the Royal Irish Academy, editor of the RIA series of documents on Irish foreign policy. Michael, what was contained in this note, first of all, and why, officially at least, why was it sent?
Well, it's very simple. It was an attempt by the American minister in Ireland, David Gray, to put pressure on De Valera, to insult, to annoy De Valera, who he greatly disliked, to get him to expel, as you said, the Axis diplomats from Dublin. Now, there were very few Axis diplomats in Dublin. Irish intelligence, military intelligence and Garda Special Branch had them under surveillance. But it was two things. One, an attempt to annoy De Valera, because a foreign diplomat should never meddle in the internal affairs of the country that they are posted to. And secondly, it was an attempt to try and make Ireland a scapegoat for any breaches in security that might occur in the run-up to D-Day, because this is the major event that takes place in 1944. The planning has been underway for many, many months. Irish military, Irish diplomats know that the Allied invasion of Hitler's Europe, of Fortress Europe, is about to take place. And Gray is using this as a way to also to stymie the ongoing Irish-American, a very good Irish-American intelligence cooperation that's taking place almost behind his back, if you like. Spike Marlon of the OSS is in continual contact with Dan Bryan, the colonel who's in charge of military intelligence of G2. So Gray really is the figure in this who is in no way heroic in his actions. It's very small-minded and petty what he does.
Okay, so it's get the diplomats from Japan, the Axis powers, Japan, Germany and Italy, out of Dublin. Was it written on the assumption that Deb would refuse and would be consequently embarrassed?
I think it's written on the assumption that a scapegoat is needed. Hmm. I think this is the State Department involvement comes in along those lines. But for Gray, it is part of a constant policy of trying to get at De Valera. He tried this earlier in 1943, and he is supremely successful in it in 1945, when his approach to De Valera angers him so much, when he calls for the keys of the German legation in Dublin before the war is actually over, that this is one of the matters that forces or that leads De Valera to take that very unwise decision of signing Hitler's book of condolence. So Gray is needling, he's trying to get De Valera to undertake some kind of difficult action or some action that will cast doubt on his capabilities.
At this point, there would have been thousands of American troops in Northern Ireland. Yes. Was there a fear that if the Irish government did not comply, that there might be an American invasion from Northern Ireland?
That was certainly the way the Defence Forces saw this, that the division, General Hugo MacNeill's division that defended the area north of Dublin, put its troops into forward positions in the field in February 1944 in anticipation that the American army would spearhead an Allied invasion across the border. And diplomatic notes like this have been used throughout modern history as pretexts for invasion. An attempt, for example, in 1940 to bring extra German diplomats in through Shannon Airport, it was seen by Dublin at the time as a pretext for an invasion. The American note looked like something similar. Here was an attempt for a pretext to invade, to lock down Ireland in the run-up to D-Day. But in fact, the intelligence cooperation between the Americans, the Irish and the British was such that Ireland was, with Irish cooperation, very effectively locked down in the run-up to D-Day.
Now, you mentioned that the Germans had agents here, but it wasn't just the Germans, Ryle. It was the American OSS, the forerunner of the CIA, the British Secret Service, MI5, they had as well. You've actually been in contact with some of the American agents who worked here. How much intelligence cooperation was there between the USA and Ireland, both before and after this American note?
Well, in 1970, I wrote to Russell Forgan, the Deputy Chief for Europe of the OSS, and he replied to me that the Irish were as cooperative as if they were allies. They have never received the cooperation due them. And the truth is that the intelligence people were opposed to the American note. The expulsion of the Axis diplomats because they believed it would endanger Allied security. Because MI5 warned that they were getting all the information they wanted at the time. They had the German legation bugged. They also, all German messages were routed via London to the continent, and they had broken the German code. So they knew exactly what the Germans were reporting, and they could cut them off at any time. And they warned that if you expel them, the Germans might send in somebody who might get some information. They were also feeding the Germans misinformation. In 1943, a German spy handed over some 2,500 documents to the OSS, and there were, I think, 14 of those were very detailed reports from Dublin on things like 1,600 air installations in Britain. And when the Americans saw it, they were alarmed that there's a fierce security problem from Dublin. And when they informed MI5, MI5 told them, this is misinformation, we're feeding the Germans. Now, if you want somebody to believe the misinformation, you bury it in a wealth of information that you know the other side knows already. And then they'll believe the kind of con job that you're planting in it. And this is what they were doing.
Right. And also, just in relation to David Gray, the US ambassador, he obviously loathed De Valera. I think the feeling was mutual. He's a very, very problematic relationship with Ireland. But he also engaged in some bizarre practices while he was here. He sent back information to the USA, apparently, based on seances.
Yeah, well, he actually, I got access, well, I was doing my doctoral dissertation in the early 70s, and I got access to a manuscript that Gray wrote about his time in Ireland.
And I think it was published a couple of years ago, wasn't it?
It was published in 2012. And now, in this, he says he had better sources than American intelligence. And his sources, the sources that he had that were different, where he believed in seances. He was holding seances in the Phoenix Park, and he was getting information from the likes of the late Arthur J. Balfour, the British Prime Minister, who told him that Joe Walsh at the Department of External Affairs is hand in glove with the German minister.
So Arthur Balfour thought Joe Walsh was a Nazi?
That Joe Walsh was, basically. He was the Gaulite that they would set up in Ireland, who's at Quisling. He was the German Quisling to take over the government in Ireland. This is what he passed on, that kind of information. And he also, the most bizarre piece was that the week before Pearl Harbor, he was informed by the late President Theodore Roosevelt that Franklin has the Japs under control and there's no danger of an Armageddon from there. And this was 5 days before Pearl Harbor.
So his attitude,
he wrote to Roosevelt afterwards that the Japs really had TR fooled. You know, he still believed that he was in touch with the ghost, but poor Teddy Roosevelt was fooled by the Japs.
In essence, though, Michael, Ireland's neutrality, it was notional in many respects. Not only were we working with the OSS, but our diplomatic missions in the Axis countries, in Italy and in Germany in particular, were actually being pressed into service on behalf of the Allies as well, weren't they?
Well, I don't think that would be an official policy. They were being pressed into service unofficially because our codes were broken very effectively by the Allies. Michael Rinn, who was the legal advisor at External Affairs during the war, talked about the trackless desert of modern neutrality. And I think that's what Ireland, what Sweden, what Switzerland practice a very similar policy.
There was a bit more on that, actually.
Well, I don't think that the Irish, particularly Joe Walsh, who you mentioned there, would ever have seen Ireland as anything other than neutral.
The truth is Spike Marlon suggested in 1943 that the Irish are so cooperative that he believed they'd allow their diplomats to be used as OSS spies. The Americans sent Robin Carter Nicholas, the head of the ERA desk at the OSS headquarters in Washington, to Dublin to talk to Joe Walsh. He asked Walsh if the Irish would allow the diplomats in Berlin, in Vichy and in Rome to be used, that the Americans would formulate questions, give them to the Department of External Affairs, which would submit the questions to the diplomats and then supply the OSS with the replies.
Okay, just let me get a quick...
Walsh said he'd have to discuss it with De Valera, and De Valera agreed, and they did it.
Okay, let me get a quick response from Michael, because we're running out of time here.
Walsh had that information to hand in any case from Irish diplomats overseas, and Walsh was capable of saying anything to any person to get the response that he particularly wanted at any given point in time. He's a very, very complex figure, a very intriguing diplomat, and somebody who really hasn't been understood effectively by historians because of that complex nature of how his view of diplomacy operated in practice.
Okay, thank you very much indeed, Michael Kennedy and Ryle Dwyer.